All right, we're talking to Paul Mayer. You were at WTMA in Charleston. When exactly?
Well, let's see now. That would have been fall of 1980.
And where were you before you were at WTMA?
I was in Memphis at WHBQ.
And why did you come to TMA from HBQ?
Rick Dees left HBQ to go play out in California, and I was doing nights there, and they asked me to do mornings. So I did mornings for a while, and the competitive situation in Memphis was a little odd. So I was looking to get more into the management end of the broadcast biz, and so I was offered a job there to be operations manager and do mornings at the same time, which is a fate worse than death. I
mean, yeah, really.
That's a real tough combination. You're always there. That means you just sleep in the control room.
Even when you're not there, you're there.
You're there. You're always there. Your spirit's there. Not that your spirit does a lot of work. You can bet your butt you're always going to be in the studio somewhere. One morning I got there at 5 o'clock, and I mean, this is a horribly run-down place. It was way down the end of that road. Orange Grove Road?
Orange Grove Road, yes.
I guessed it after all these years. Okay. It was all the way down the end of that road, almost on the water. You could hardly see the building from the road because they had like two or three dumpsters out front. You had to park next to the dumpsters. But I got there quite early in the morning when I did mornings. I went on the air at 5:30, so I would get there like 3:30. And I got there one morning and got out of my car and started walking towards the building. And I heard something behind that dumpster rustling around. And I thought, there's somebody back there. And the guy who did overnights, his name was Mike Green, who I had hired from Jacksonville. He ran a limousine service or something years later. Anyway, Mike did overnights, and I thought he was out there pulling some kind of prank on me or something. So I thought, it's got to be him. He's back there goofing on me or something, because you know? He knew what time I got there every morning. I came around the corner of the dumpster, and I was wrong. Here was this, like, of course, now I'm talking from the eyes of terror here. Here was this gigantic 400-foot rabid raccoon. And this thing came out after me on its hind legs. Well, I'm kind of a big guy, but that big guy could move pretty damn fast that morning. This thing came after me and came all the way up to the door of the building. I couldn't get my keys out fast enough. I thought, I'm going to die. I'm going to be bitten and eaten alive by the raccoons out here in the dumpster. This thing and all its family are hiding out here, and they couldn't find enough surplus, you know, dumpster dining. They're going to put my butt on a spit. And it's going to be Bessinger's Barbecue right here. I'm a dead man. Well, the next morning when I pulled up there, I had a company car, except when the owner was in town, and then he had to use it. That was another thing that ticked me off. I was part of the deal when I got there was that I'd have a company car. Well, you know, in most businesses, when you're given a company car, then you have your own car. Well, when the owner came to town, then he used my car. Well, I didn't have a car then. You know, so that was a real drag. Oh, my God, here's the boss without a car. That was a wonderful image to portray to the staff. So, anyway, I'd pull up in this car, and it was like a blue Camaro, or so it was a sports car. It was a really nice-looking vehicle. And I'd pull up to that dumpster, and I'd bump it with that big bumper, you know, boom, you know, just to scare the hell out of the life that was in there at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. And things would come flying out of it. And I'd wait 10 minutes, then I'd get out of the car and go back in. But after that run-in with Rocky Raccoon, that was about it for me.
So you answered an ad in one of the trade magazines and came to WTMA? Is that how
that
worked?
No, not really. They'd just been sold, I guess, at that time to Sconix. And the people at Sconix brought in a new general manager, and the new general manager brought in a new consultant, and the consultant was a friend of mine. He brought me in.
Who was the consultant? Do you remember?
John Long. John had previously been the program director in Memphis. I don't know. It's a radio is kind of a business where quite often one thing is said and the other thing is done. The whole game plan was that there were two radio stations in the building at the time, TMA and, oh boy, I want to say...
WPXI.
PXI, there you go, which later became SX, which I, by the way, am the guy that picked out the call letters for that radio station.
Oh, really?
That's correct. But anyway, people have to go way back in their head to remember that at that time is when FM was really coming to prominence, and a lot of AM stations were really suffering in the music business. As far as music radio goes, it was very hard to compete with, you know, FM stereo and so on. WTMA at that time was going to be an adult contemporary station aimed at those middle-aged folks who are kind of like office listening and so on, but we were really having a hard time competing as an AM. There was some signal trouble. There was also another station in town was the big gun at that time. So the best way to compete with that was to somehow get WTMA on FM. And the game plan was on the January 1st of 81, they were going to switch the old patch cords there, and that P PXI. That was going to go to the AM frequency, and TMA was going to go FM. I was brought in there specifically for that purpose. 2 weeks prior to that happening, the ownership decided, oh, we don't want to play that game. Let's do something else. That's when they decided, well, we're just going to leave TMA the way it is on the AM at that time. And that's when the SX station was born.
Were you disappointed about that?
Yes, I think so. I had just moved there and moved friends of mine into positions there. Tad Griffin, I guess his name there was Jay Griffin.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with him in Memphis, and he was in Kansas at the time, and I brought him in because he's an excellent production wizard and could make a magical commercial happen out of the midair. Made some major changes in the staff and so on, and the whole thing just bottomed out, and I was very disappointed in it, especially in the fact that nobody knew anything about it. It was just the owners, you know, they have the right, their toy, so they want to play with it, they can, and they did. Fortunately for them, it became a very successful FM station. TMA, I think, at that time, didn't do very well as an AM adult contemporary station. You know, it was just continuing to go downhill as the AMs did at that time, but were trying to play music. That was just the trend of radio at that time. So, very frustrated with the situation, I said, well, this isn't going to work out for me. The station across the street, KTM, just prior to the announcement of this change that wasn't going to happen, had hired another friend of mine, a previous co-worker, as program director, a fellow by the name of Paul Sebastian. So when Paul came to town, he and I, of course, talked on the phone, and I was telling him about the frustration I was going through, and he said, well, why don't you come over here and work here? So I did, like in a matter of minutes. When the TMA thing fell through, then I went over to work for KTM.
So how long do you think that you were at TMA the whole time?
I think that was only a period of like September or October until January.
So just a few months.
Yeah, just a few months, yeah. Then I was at KTM for a while. I don't remember how long that lasted. That didn't last a whole lot of time because Sebastian left shortly after that. And that was also a place that was in flux, as they say. And there were a lot of changes going on there, and that just didn't seem to work out very well. And in kind of an unusual situation, I was getting really upset with the radio business at the time and was getting kind of frustrated with it. But, you know, I had a family that seems to want to eat. So I took a job with a basically automated station that was AM, and it played big band music. And I went to work there partly to keep some kind of income.
And what town was this in?
That was in Charleston. It was the strangest little radio station.
Was this at 1450 WQSN?
Yes, it was, because it was something that the callers were like U.S. Navy or something. Their studio was located in this old house.
Mm-hmm, that's the one.
And it sat on stilts over a creek. And the building wasn't in the greatest condition, and you'd sit in the control room there and play radio, and of course the image you're giving out over the air is that you're in a lavish, wonderful, warm studio or whatever, and in fact you'd turn around and crabs would be walking across the floor. They'd come up those piers and they'd come in. There were holes in the floor. That was a different place. Shortly after that, I ran into a personal situation where my parents had gotten ill, and I left the radio biz for a while and went and helped out my parents with their business. And then I got back into it in Baltimore. I worked at the number one top 40 station there for a while, part-time, while I was running my parents' dry cleaning business.
What were the call letters?
B104.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
WBSB. And I worked there part-time for a while, and then I did afternoons on WMIX, or WWMX, which was technically the call letters. I did afternoons there and the Saturday Night Oldies show, and that was a lot of fun. I did that until 1991, and another ghost crossed my path. Another person from the radio biz in Memphis invited me to come down there. I still wanted to get into programming again, but the problem was that when I got out of radio after Charleston, I'd gotten too far out of the loop, and that's when radio went through a lot of changes. You know, it became computerized, and computerized music logs, and all those things evolved, and I wasn't there when that happened, and so I was really behind the behind, you know? So I wanted to get back into programming or something, and so I went to Florence, Alabama, and worked for a station there for about a year. It was owned by Sam Phillips, the guy, you know, that put Elvis together on Sun Records. He was based out of Memphis, but he owned this station in Florence, Alabama. And I did that for about a year, and then I got a deal where I could be part ownership with a radio station that, again, involved John Long. And this was in Augusta, Georgia. So we moved to Augusta, Georgia.
Which station in Augusta was that?
Well, it was a little station called AGA. PA, I believe. It didn't last very long. We got there. It was a deal where John was going to manage it. This was going to be one of the first totally computerized automated radio stations. I was going to handle the programming end of it. He was going to do the management and sales and so on. We got it off the ground, and it started to do fairly well. It was kind of a light AC format.
FM?
Yeah, oh yeah. And it was only a 6,000 watt, but they could get an increase to 25. We were actually in a little town of Waynesboro, Georgia, which is like 20 miles or so south of Augusta. And with that power increase, we would have covered the whole market. So that finally came through, but at the time it came through, the guy who was financing the whole deal decided he didn't want any more to do with it. He didn't know anything about radio. He was just a financial backer, and so he backed out, and the whole thing kind of fell apart, and we ended up having to sell the station off. And so I went to work for a country station.
GUS?
My wife went to work for them, the company that owned that. That was Benchmark, I believe, at the time. I went to work for KXC, Kix 99, and I did that for, that was from 92 through 95. And then in 95, I got the offer to come here where I am in Maryland, which I actually Delaware, technically Delaware. This was a group of stations where they had it's kind of an odd market in the fact that it's very seasonal. It's on the beach, you know, so in the wintertime, there's no business here. You know, in the summer, everybody has to make all their money with the tourists, or you die for the rest of the year. Anyway, it was a unique situation. It was a country station again, and it was an operation manager deal. So I came up here and did this for about 2 or 3 months when I realized that, again, I'd been promised something that it wasn't going to happen. So I said, the heck with it. I'm done with radio. Good night, everybody. See ya. I'm leaving stage left. And I took off, and shortly after that, kind of did some advertising work and did commercials and things like that. But as you know, that's like riding the roller coaster from hell. So I didn't do that very long, and I decided to do something that I've thought about ever since I was a little kid, and that is real estate, and that's what I've been doing ever since.